Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend.
Well, welcome to today's episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, calling in live from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do every Tuesday at noon Eastern. I have with me today my co-host and apprentice, Jennifer Carter, from EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com, and my good friend, the story lady, Rhonda Del Baccio, from ProfitableStorytelling.com. Welcome, ladies.
Hey, welcome, Gina. Or hello, it's good to be here today. How are you?
I'm good, and you? Hey, Rhonda. Well, I had a guest all lined up for today, but we got all our signals crossed, and I don't know that she's actually going to be here. So here's what we're going to do. Jennifer, I'm going to put you on Getting With Her for next week's show. Her name is Dr. Suzanne Gutekunst, and she is one amazing lady. Rhonda, you will love her. She is the author of Top Secret Fat Loss Secrets and the author of Get Google Ads Free. Get Google Ads Free is one of those little baby clickbank books that only sells about 300 to 500 copies a day. You know, nothing major.
Just 300 to 500 copies, huh?
Yeah.
Well, in a day, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rough life, right?
You know, it's funny that you ran into her, or she ran into you, or however that worked out, and I will make it right, and we'll make sure that she's here next week if that works out for her. If she's listening, my apologies go out to her. Incidentally, I'm one of her affiliates, so I'm well aware of, well, at least the fat loss secrets part, and I didn't know about the Get Google Ads Free, so I'm very excited about that, because it's all about figuring out how we can get our message out the quickest to the most number of people. The right most number of people, right?
Exactly. She's got a list of more than 250,000 people. And with her list, she has a site called jvrocket.com that she actually sells access to her list for $2,500 for a single mailing. And she says that it's such an effective list that she's actually getting ready to both double the price and require people to use an affiliate link for her, and it's still a bargain, simply because they will make so much more than that back.
Well, now, let's talk about that, Gina. $2,500, okay, depending on where you are in business. If you're Donald Trump, it's a drop in the bucket. If you're just starting out, it seems like a lot. But let's talk about this here. If she has 250,000 people, and these aren't people that she just went and, what's that called, fishing or spider. Anyways, when you go out and you take everybody's address without their permission on the Internet, it's not that kind of a list. It's the kind of list,
no,
hers, it's responsive, et cetera.
It's actually almost all buyers.
Okay.
So it's really more like a list of 2.5 million subscribers.
2.5 million subscribers.
Because
okay.
It's really mostly buyers, and a list of buyers is worth 10 times more.
Right.
So a person could mail out to, taking her list as an example, to 250,000 people, 250,000 responsive people, if we broke it down over a year, $200 a month, or they could spend a year trying to build up their list, not pay the money because it's a lot of money to some people, if we're looking at it from that point of view, and spend a year trying to build up a few leads into their opt-ins all by themselves. I wonder what the more effective action would be.
It comes out to about a penny per subscriber to do that mailing.
Per subscriber, okay. And so for everybody who's listening who's just starting out building leads from scratch, you and I both know you're spending a lot more than that just trying to get those first 10, first 100, first however many people.
But yeah, I mean, if you're doing pay-per-clicks, just straight pay-per-clicks, you're spending more than a penny a click, right? And since not everybody subscribes, you know you're spending more than a penny per subscriber.
Yeah. So,
absolutely.
It's going to be interesting to see how she built that up. It's funny. I first saw her, you know, at the Fat Loss Secrets. What? That's how I know her. The Fat Loss Secrets, you know, doctor who busted it all wide open, all the myths in the industry and stuff. But yeah. Really interesting to see the rest of it. Because while that message is important, the business behind how she got that message out there is what will be really interesting and is what we're interested
Absolutely.
In.
Exactly. And what she does today is she not only has that fat loss book, but she also has, I think, 3 or 4 internet marketing-related products like Get Google Ads Free, and she's got, I think, 2 or 3 other ones through the same business. So she's a former chiropractor, and really relationships have been a big key to her success. It's all the relationships that she has built up that have really allowed her to become so successful. So I'm really excited about having her on the show and really having her kind of spill her guts about how she builds lists that are that responsive. That's a really responsive list.
That's pretty darn responsive. Well,
it's things to teach me, I'll tell you. That's great.
Yep.
Until we have her as a guest on the show, let me turn this back around to you, Gina, and Rhonda as well. So both of you have been playing strongly on the Internet here for a little bit of time, and you've done all kinds of different things to build up responsive lists. So I'd like to ask you, what are some of the most effective things? We all do 100 different things. We're trying to build our list, trying to build our business, most of which don't work that well, some of which work really well. So I'd like to ask you, ladies, what are some of the things that you've done that have been the most effective at building up your most effective subscribers?
Well, for me, I used a giveaway to build my initial list a couple years ago when I transitioned out of JV and got into doing my own thing. So I knew when I did that I was going to need a number of different things in place. Number one, I needed products to sell. How could I go about getting products quickly? Number two, I knew I needed a list. How could I go about getting a list? Number three, I knew I needed traffic, and I really wanted a way to have organic traffic that wasn't going to cost me in terms of pay-per-click or other paid advertising quickly. So I used those three needs and said, okay, how can I build a plan that will allow me to get all of this within a year? Now, I didn't meet my goal of a year. It took me about 14 months. So what I did was my first product became a coaching program because that didn't need any lead time. How could I go out and, you know, sell a coaching program and use the coaching program to then create other info products? I think the first probably 6 to 8 weeks worth of calls became transcriptions that then got edited into other products. The Miracle Motivational Package was the first one. Abundant Info Products was the second. So I got my initial base of students, there were only 6 of them, not very many, simply by word of mouth from people I had met at various seminars and, you know, going out and telling people, hey, I'm getting ready to do a coaching program. Each one of those people paid $5,000, so it wasn't like it was a freebie. I had 6 people, $5,000 each, 30 grand. Not too shabby for your first product, right?
Not too shabby for your first product on the Internet, yeah. Well,
so while I was doing that, I said, okay, let's work on the list next, because if I've got a list, then I have a way to make money instantly all the time. And so that's when I partnered with Henry Gold to be able to use his software and his system to create a giveaway that could bring in my list. So we did 117 self-improvement gifts in July of 2007. Took us about 60 days to plan that promotion. I had a list of about 3,800 prospects that I could use as JV partners, from which I brought in about 250 of them initially. And those 250 mailed to all of their subscribers and brought in about 12,000 subscribers. I had put together a series of lessons, again, stuff that I had used in my coaching, to teach those subscribers how to become affiliates and go out and get me more subscribers. By the end of the 30-day promotion, we had brought in a total of 52,000 subscribers. Now, if I would have just taken those subscribers and just said, okay, well, I'm just going to mail to them the way everybody else does, it probably would not have turned into a very responsive list. Number one, I was sharing the list because Henry Gold had a copy of it and I had a copy of it. So who were these people going to go with? Were they going to listen to Henry? Were they going to listen to me? That was one potential issue. And number two, they really didn't know me from Adam other than the fact that I was the person that helped them get these gifts. They really weren't even getting gifts from me, so to speak. They were getting gifts from my JV partners. So I used the Miracle Motivational Package that had my story in it as the first product that they would be getting. That package was really helpful in terms of building a relationship simply because the package is all about my story. That was very intentional. I sold probably over 1,000 copies. I think it was like 1,200 copies of it during the 30-day period that we ran the site, just so that I could build a stronger relationship with people. And at the same time, I also did 72 teleconferences in 30 days.
72?
72. I really wanted to wow these people. I wanted them to really feel like I was serving them well. We used the teleconferences, of course, to sell something else. And what we sold was tickets to a live event 60 days later. It wasn't so much about the money. In fact, I didn't actually end up making any money from those ticket sales at all, personally. But it was the relationship that we were building through all 72 of those calls. And to this day, every seminar I go to, I run into people who were taking part in those 72 teleconferences, and it has really created some huge success stories. Bob Yeager, who was a guest on this show a couple weeks ago, Bob Yeager came into my world because of those 72 teleconferences. Those were his first introduction into internet marketing of any sort. And he has gone on 2 years later to have built more than a seven-figure business of his own simply because of those teleconferences and how motivational they were and how instructional they were to him. So by the time we got done mailing 72 teleconference notifications out to people, the list had really dwindled from about 52,000 down to about 40,000. There were quite a few opt-outs. But I didn't really worry about the opt-outs. What I was worried about was serving the remaining people to the best of my ability. And that is still a core of my list today, is the people that were there during that time. I've probably added another 15 to 20,000 to my list since then, but the majority of my buyers, at least, come from the people that came into my list back then. Now, by the end of 2007, I was about 10 months into my plan, and I said, well, I've got my products. I've got at least two products. I now have my list. Now what else do I need? Well, I still needed a way to have organic traffic, and I wanted a way to get a few more products out the door so that the products could then continue selling my course on its own on autopilot, without me having to go and promote that separately. So my plan became launching the 30-Day IM Challenge, which I launched in April of last year, as a way to put my system in place on my blog to capture great search engine rankings, good page rank, and drive traffic. I was looking for both a tool that I could use to build strategic alliance relationships down the road, as well as a tool that would help me with the search engine ranking. Now, what most people don't really talk a lot about is the power of building deep internal links on your website when it comes to search engine listings. My blogging system, as you know, Jennifer, and Rhonda as well, has very specific things that get done with your blog to build traffic. It also builds relationships. So I have the magic formula for writing a powerful post that incorporates both keywords as well as stories to really get that relationship going while at the same time building search engine ranking and page rank. And part of why it works so well is because it creates internal links while at the same time creating external links. The first time I did my challenge, I had the challenge just on the blog. So you really didn't have to go and opt into a list in order to get through all 18 lessons and more than 750 pages worth of material. All you had to do was click on a page on the blog and you could go straight to the lesson and read it on the blog itself. Because of all of that keyword-rich content, and it had so many different links in it, and all of those links linked to other places on the blog or the website itself, it ended up causing me to go from a page rank of 0 to a page rank of 4 in 22 days. And that was just because of all of that keyword-rich content that had anchor text with links that would go very deep. So one link might follow from a blog post to lesson 1. And then when you got to lesson 1, there would be another link to lesson 2, and then another link to lesson 3, and by the time you were done, there were probably 25 blog posts, all of them going to lesson 1, and then having all of these lesson 1s going all the way through to lesson 18. So it's a 19-level deep link, and there were probably, 25 to 30 of them that deep. Others were maybe 3 and 4 levels deep, and there were also links that went off the site to other high page rank sites. So it was because of that combination that it caused me to shoot up in the search engines for great keywords. Any topics that were related to the lessons, I researched my keywords first and made sure that I used those that would be likely to drive more traffic. By the following month, I was getting over 12,000 visitors a month organically without doing anything else, just from search traffic.
And that's about a year into it, about a month or two after you launched the 30-day IM challenge, right?
About 30 days after. And so that was 14 months total from the time I had started my plan. So by that point, I had a list that was about 48,000. I had a high-end product. I had 4 low-end products, and I had about 10 to 12,000 unique visitors per month coming in.
Okay, so that's not too shabby, and we're going to back up a little here, because for those of us who are not the JV queen, some of this stuff is still new, and I'm going to have you re-explain some of that, and for those who are listening...
Okay.
The great value of this show is you've got experts like Gina, who's just been an expert for a long time. You've got Rhonda, the story lady. Then you have Jennifer, who's an expert in her own thing. But the internet marketing is something I'm growing in, and so I'm learning alongside with you guys. And I get to say, wait, back up. What does that mean? So we're back it up.
Here's one really cool part I want to make sure you heard in all of that.
Okay. All right.
Although I had JV partners who promoted the initial giveaway, which was a free thing, there wasn't any paid stuff. Other than that one piece, none of it involved having JV partners or affiliates. That also meant that I didn't have to take commissions out on anything.
Okay. So, but you did to start with, to jumpstart the list, and then from there you built it. I want to focus on a few different things that you said that's really important going back to that. First off, you built a list of 48,000, give or take, in under a year, which is pretty good. Again, not just names you just grabbed somewhere off the internet. These were your people, your list. They knew who you were, and it was responsive. That's
absolutely.
That's great. That's what everybody hopes for. That's why we're on this show, so we can figure out how to do that. Now, something else you said, let's see, somewhere in there after you did the initial launch with the JV partners, you got that list going. You made the statement, I didn't want to email like the list like everybody else does and have it turn into a non-responsive list.
Right.
I want to ask you, what do you mean email like everybody else? And let me clarify before you answer that. When people are starting to, they know you've got to send out emails, you've got autoresponders, you've got to, you know, do articles, this, that, and the other. There's definitely this idea of, okay, I know I'm supposed to do that, but not necessarily knowing what they're supposed to key in on when they write those emails, when they send those articles. So they're just kind of sending whatever they can. They're guessing, well, this sounds good, or I heard that guy do that and that lady do that. What is it that you did, Gina, that was different about, you know, in comparison to what everybody else normally does to make your list so responsive?
Well, I had seen so many different JV giveaways because of my experience as a broker. And in each one, people would build lists of between 10 and 20,000 in under a month.
Okay.
Now, when you hear a lot of the big guru types talking about the value of their list, most of them have numbers of between $1 per subscriber per month and $10 per subscriber per month, which would mean if you built a list of 10,000 people, if you were at a dollar per month, that you should expect to make $10,000 per month from a list of 10,000. What I was hearing from the people who had built lists from giveaways was that if they had built a list of 10,000, they'd probably only bring in $1,000 a month thereafter. And it was because of the fact that these were people who were looking for stuff for free. They hadn't paid anything for it, and there was no relationship there.
Okay.
And even when these guys were mailing to them on a regular basis, which should have built relationships, they weren't usually successful in increasing that amount. They might get up to $2,000 a month from a list of 10,000, but that's about it.
Okay.
And so I knew if I was going to develop a list that could make me a dollar per month per subscriber, that I really needed something more, something different. And I didn't want to do all the same things that everybody else was doing because they obviously weren't working that well. What I've seen over and over again at that point was how responsive people could be from teleconferences. I had already done teleconferences with my clients where we were successful in selling 20% of the people on a call on the products that we had to offer. That's a very responsive group. Now, if I could combine the two things so that I could take this brand new list of freebie seekers and turn them into people who are responding to things on teleconferences, number one, they'd be able to get to know me better because we'd be able to interact easily in real time on the telephone. Number two, I'd be able to get them converted into buyers because they would be able to hear these, you know, these conferences that were really educational that had offers at the end of them. And so I really wanted a way to wow them. 72 teleconferences in 30 days is something I don't think I will ever do again. It was exhausting. But I would certainly consider doing 30 teleconferences in 30 days, and even that would really wow an audience.
Mm-hmm.
In setting up those 72 teleconferences, I really both picked my times carefully and picked my topics carefully. I really went out trying to figure out what it was that these people wanted, what they were really interested in, and where they were located. And one of the things that I had seen just from the opt-ins was that better than 90% of this new list came from outside the U.S. What that told me was that I couldn't just do teleconferences at 8 o'clock at night. If I did, the people outside the U.S. weren't likely to be people who would be on my teleconferences. So I'd have 10% of my list that might want to show up. So I did teleconferences at two different times every day. They were either at 10 a.m. or 2 p.m., or they were at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m., so that both the people outside the U.S. and the people inside the U.S. would be able to participate in it. I also took a look at the products that these people had been downloading, and I could see the numbers easily in my control panel that told me which of the products were the hottest. The topics for the calls were all based on the topics that were hottest in terms of the products that they were downloading. I did not have 72 different topics. I had about 28 different topics in the 72 calls. Frequently, I would repeat the topics, especially if I was doing a morning call and an afternoon call or a morning call and an evening call, so that both audiences would be able to hear the same topic. This was not an internet marketing list. This was very much a self-improvement list. They were interested in internet marketing, but only because it was a way to improve their finances. So most of the call topics had to do with something that would have helped in terms of improving themselves. So I might have done a call about leaving a legacy in your life. Now, it was really about building a business or building a list or building some traffic, but what it was called was leaving a legacy in your life, because that was the type of thing that these people were downloading. If I did a call on list building, it wouldn't necessarily be about list building. It would be about either making a difference in the world or getting your message out to the masses, because that's what these people were downloading. And so the topics that I chose, the times that I chose, were all based around both the audience that I had and what I wanted to do with them down the road. And that's what really turned them into an extremely responsive list.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you warmed them up and you stayed warm, kept them warm the whole time. And I was going to ask you, were these teleconferences with all your JV partners? And clearly, no.
No, just my own list.
Today we're having a teleconference on this self-improvement topic, and then tomorrow this one, and the next day that one. So it took a little bit of preparation to come up with these 26 different topics.
Yeah, it really didn't. I was doing them on the fly. Every morning I was like sitting there looking at the stats, trying to figure out the topics for the next day's call. I really didn't take much more than a 45 minutes to an hour to figure out what I was going to do the call on.
And so how did you know to find something that your list would be interested in? Because I know people say all the time, well, they spend a month writing one email, you know, or one sales copy page to their list or this list they're trying to build, because they're trying to get it just right.
Because there were more than 200 products that they had been downloading during that 30-day period, because that's the nature of a giveaway. There were products in a lot of different topics. Most were self-improvement related. Some were internet marketing related. Some were even about making money on eBay. I could use that data to figure out what this list wanted. And in the registration, we had a two-step registration. They would initially fill out their first name and email address. Then they would go to a second page where they would put in their last name, their city, state, country, and telephone number. So that if we put all of that data into one form on the front page, we had under 30% of our visitors opting in. But when we split it into two parts, the first part required, the second part optional, we ended up with more than 85% of our visitors signing up at least with the first name and the email address. And of the 85% that would do that, about 60% on the next page would give us the optional information. So I could see where they were located. I could see what they were already downloading. And that was part of what really made this work, was having that data available to me anytime I needed it.
Okay, and what was the incentive for why would people give the optional information on the second page? Was there then something else they could get if they filled out the optional secondary information?
Absolutely not. It was truly just optional, and basically all it said was that we were going to be holding teleconferences and that we would be able to help show them things that would be of interest to them by having this information. And that was all it really said. So they knew that they'd get a more targeted time for their teleconference, basically, and that's about it. And really the only reason we took the information was because it would help us target them better.
Okay. So it's interesting. So you took a look. You didn't just pull these ideas out of the air. You took a look at what people were paying attention to,
right.
What they were downloading, where they came from. And so this, by the way, is a really good thing to do on our own list. Whether we're doing a JV giveaway with 250,000 topics or we're just, you know, we're just writing blogs or we're sending out articles, we can see what people are responding to, and based on what people are responding to more, that's what we want to focus on more.
Absolutely. And so even the event itself, we sold 232 tickets. Some were at $97, and the $97 was refundable. Some were at just $97. They were at all different price points all the way up to $697. Had I not had a partner in that, just the ticket sales alone grossed about $38,000. There were no affiliate commissions that needed to be paid on it because they were just sold to this list. Then at the event, after the split with the speakers, there was another $104,000 in revenues generated from the back of the room sales. So about $150,000 in all from ticket sales and back of the room sales that was pure profit that didn't have to be split with affiliates at all.
Okay, and this was an internet marketing event, or what kind of event was it?
It was a Leaving Your Legacy by Building a Business event. So, again, we had to go with the idea of these were self-improvement people, and we had to base the conference around what they wanted, not around what we wanted it to be. So we did have some internet marketing speakers, but for the most part, the speakers were really asked to do things that were more self-improvement related, even if they were speaking on internet marketing. They needed to tie it to the whole self-improvement concept. What we realized during the event was that the people that were actually there were people we didn't even expect. It turned out that these were neither self-improvement people nor internet marketing people. What they really were network marketing people. And we really didn't realize it until we got to the event. How we realized it was kind of funny. One of our speakers was Tom Bell, whose claim to fame comes from having sold about $15 million worth of e-books at $19.95 each, using a specific method that he called gateway pages that not only ask for a first name, last name, and email address, but they also ask a survey question. And the answer to that survey question then allows you to make the sales page customized based on their answer. Well, when Tom gets up on stage to speak, he always surveys the audience either earlier that day or the day before so that he can use the answers as an example within his presentation. So Tom did what he always does. He asked if he could do a survey the day before. I said sure. He had two questions. He was really using it only as an illustration during his speech. And what we learned from asking the two questions was that we had this third audience that we didn't even realize we had.
Hmm. interesting. It's so interesting that network marketers were the ones that responded to this self-improvement giveaway that had a business twist to it, but was mostly self-improvement.
Exactly.
I wonder what that says about network marketers as a whole.
The first question was, what type of business do you have? And the second question was, what is your biggest question related to building your business? And almost every single person had a question related to either where to buy leads or how to create leads or how to build a downline. It was really incredible when we looked at those answers.
Interesting. Well, and I imagine it helped make the rest of the event.
Well, a number of the speakers changed their pitch on the spot.
Yeah.
This had happened on the first day of the event. And so for the second and third days of the event, the speakers were literally going and changing their presentations on the spot. Their offers changed, everything changed, because it's a very different audience than what we thought we had. Tom put a coaching program together on the fly from the stage just because that was who the audience was. I ended up going on to teach that program with them. It was a 7-month program on using my system to build a network marketing organization. And it was really, really good. I mean, the people that came out of that, there were 11 people in the program, have turned into some of my biggest word-of-mouth people. They truly tell everybody they know, and they have been responsible for bringing in a large percentage of the new subscribers on my list, as well as a number of apprentices, and they don't even do it with an affiliate commission. They were so blown away by the content and their results from the coaching program that they just tell everybody about it.
That's the kind of customers, clients, and fans that we all want and that we all work for. That's fantastic. Just.
And it really all started because of this process. The going from the freebie seeker list to the teleconferences, from the teleconferences to the events, to changing things to better serve people, and so on. And ever since that time, by the time that whole thing got over, I had two products, the Miracle Motivational Package, the Abundant Info products. I took the materials that I had used to train the members and turned them into a third product, which is my giveaway Secrets of the JV Queen. When I then went to release the challenge last year, I put together my fourth product, which was 21 Days to Blogging Profits. And from July until April, I had continually worked on Secret Confessions of a JV Queen, which is my product about joint ventures, and really just kind of quietly released that, no big fanfare or anything. It was just kind of a quiet release. And all of my sales happen just from the list and the traffic and the organic search. I think I have less than 2% of all of my sales that have ever come in through an affiliate link.
Really? Less than 2% from an affiliate link? Let me ask you this, Gina. You built that initial list, and I know you continue to grow your list because that's what you do. That's what you're good at. But you basically said at the beginning of this show that it started, this particular business that you're working right now, it started with this list you built in 2007.
Yeah,
and you just continue to enrich the list, I think. I know it continues to grow, but as you said, you've got fans. I mean, they pop up all the time on this show. You've had them pop up a couple times on the on your mentoring calls that you do. You know, you get people from way back when who pop up. Who are some of your biggest fans?
Part
of what you just said a minute ago had to do with organic traffic, which leads me back to another question or another topic I wanted you to go more in-depth to, because I'm not sure that people understand it that well, and that is this. You talked about the power of deep internal links is what you called it, which I know had a lot to do with your bringing in this organic traffic, this traffic where people found you because they wanted and needed to find you.
Yes.
Tell us again a little more simply what you mean by building these deep internal links, what you mean by going, you know, 20, 30 levels deep. What does that mean, and what does that mean for your traffic being more organic?
Okay. There are four types of links. The first type of link is a backlink, meaning some other site links to you. Those links can sometimes be valuable and sometimes be not valuable at all. It depends upon what types of sites are linking to you. Google has a measure that they call PageRank. A site can be ranked from 0 to 10, which is a measure, according to Google, of whether or not this site is considered an expert or an authority. Anything ranked at 5 or above is considered an authority by Google. Now, that page rank is determined by a number of different factors. In part, it's determined by how many backlinks come into a site. It's also in part determined by these other types of links. The backlinks that are important are those that are coming from other sites that Google considers to be an expert. Think of it like this. Google's going out and they're rating these sites to determine who's an expert and who's not. They're in the business of the search engines. That means to them that they need to keep their searchers happy by showing their searchers sites that really have good quality stuff. But they don't manually go through every single website out there. They need to be able to go out and look at a site in an automated way. And so they use PageRank as one of the things that they can use in determining whether or not a site is an expert or not. It is affected by lots of different factors. How many pages are in your website? Now, it's not just the number of pages, but it's the fact that your pages should have good keyword-rich content. Back to Google says, hey, this is an expert. But again, they need to be able to look at it in an automated way to see if that happens and if it's true. So they're looking at separate elements on those pages. They're looking at the title of the page, the thing that shows up in your browser window in the upper left-hand corner above the file edit view thing. They're looking up there. They want to see that you have titles and that the titles have keywords. They're looking at the URL itself. Again, they want to even find out whether you have keywords within the URL itself. And then they're looking at what's on that page. If that page has words that are keywords and those keywords are linked to other pages, or to other sites, that to Google helps to indicate that this site might be an expert. When they've already determined that one site is an expert, they want to see when another site links back to that expert. To Google, it's kind of like saying, well, if this guy's an expert and this expert is linking to that site, then maybe that site's an expert too. Otherwise, why else would an expert be linking to it? And then when they get to the other guy's site and the other guy is linking back to this expert, now Google's kind of going, hey, this guy's known, he knows about one of our experts. Maybe we should pay attention to this guy a little bit more. So these four different types of links help Google to make that determination. So you've got these backlinks. What you really need are thousands of backlinks from high page rank sites. You also need external links, meaning links from your site to other sites. The ones that you want are the links going back to other sites that Google thinks is an expert. You do not want what is called reciprocal links, meaning I link to you and you link back to me. When Google sees that, they just go, ah, those experts are friends. It was a false alarm. What a big deal. They don't assume that that means that both sites are experts. They just look at it as a false alarm. They're just friends linking to one another. So reciprocal links are not that valuable. They used to be, but they haven't been now for a while. So in addition to the thousands of backlinks coming in from sites with a high page rank, you need dozens to hundreds of these external links that go from your site to other sites that Google thinks of as being an expert, meaning page rank of 5 or higher sites. And then you also want internal links, meaning links that go from one place in your site to another place within your site. Now, I had mentioned at the beginning of this particular explanation that Google is looking at all of the pages within the site. They want a volume of information. They want for their searchers to find sites that are well organized. Again, they need to see that from an automated standpoint to assess it. So when you've got a post on your blog that links to a page on your blog, and that page on your blog links to a sales letter on your blog, and the sales letter on your website, it's all on the same site, links to an upsell, and the upsell links to the download page, that creates this link that shows Google that there are many different pages. If all of those different pages are using anchor text that are keywords to do these linking, in other words, when it says click here to download, if the words click here are blue and underlined, click here is the anchor text. What Google's looking for is keywords being used as that anchor text. And they're seeing that page 1 links to page 2 and page 2 to page 3 and page 3 to page 4. It's telling them that this site is well organized. And so it's another factor that gets put into figuring out this site's page rank. So you want about an equal number of internal and external links. You want about 10 times more backlinks. And all of that combined with the keyword-rich content goes into the determination of your site's page rank. The higher your page rank, the higher your search engine ranking. And even though page rank is something that's only used by Google in determining your search engine rankings, simply because all of the search engines have similar criteria that they use when they're going out looking at the different websites, if you have a high page rank in Google, you almost always have high search engine rankings in these other sites as well. It's not that they're out looking at your page rank causing that to happen. It's just that each one looks at similar elements to determine where your search engine ranking should be. So your goal is to find keywords that can drive substantial quantities of traffic. What that means is you're looking for keywords that have a high volume of searches on a monthly basis, that's the demand, and at the same time have a relatively low amount of supply. In other words, your competition. There's always a supply and demand evaluation that needs to take place in any economic situation. And this is no different when you're talking about how much search traffic you're going to get or organic traffic. You've got to evaluate both. What I look for are keywords that have at least 10,000 monthly searches through either Word Tracker or my favorite search tool, which is Click Ad Equalizer. And at the same time, those same keywords, if you put quotation marks around them and look them up in Google, need to have less than 1 million results. If you have more than that, you can still get some traffic, but you're not going to get the same kinds of search engine rankings, so you're going to get a smaller percentage of the available traffic. And what was the question you had asked, Jennifer?
Okay, well, it was just what you answered, which is how do you find that? And I want to reiterate this because it's really important, this little formula you just talked about. So you said to find these high-demand words, in other words, everybody's looking for them, but low supply, meaning not everybody's writing about them, keywords, you need to do a search on either Word Tracker or, as you said, use Click Ad Equalizer, which gives you a lot more information. But anyways, they need to have at least 10,000 searches for that keyword per month. And if I put that keyword, whatever it is, cats, in quotation marks in Google, I want at least 10,000 monthly searches, but I want less than 1 million results showing up when I put, quote, unquote, the word cats, for example, in quotation marks. I want less than 1 million results coming up. Which
yeah, you don't have to put quotation marks around it if it's a single word, but if it's two or more words, you do have to put quotation marks around it.
Okay, okay. So, and just one other thing, and I think, you know, some of the people out here know this, others don't. To find the page rank, how important a page is, of course, we all know CNN is a big page, and CNN would be a great example of a page I would want linking to my site, empoweringwomeninbusiness.com, because CNN is big. That would be huge if they linked to me. But if it's another site that you haven't heard of before, the way to figure out what their page ranking is through that, there's that little thing on the Google toolbar called that page rank. And if you don't have that, just do a search in Google for Google toolbar. It will come up, download it, and you know then it's going to be on the top of your browser. And then you'll see this little thing that says page rank, and that's how you can tell. And it will be a little bit green if there's any kind of ranking at all.
No, why would it be good for CNN to link to you, Jennifer?
Because they're huge. Let's see what CNN's they are a big, a powerful site, and if CNN was linking to me, that would mean that I must be important or my site must be. Let's see what CNN's Google PageRank is. My computer's a little slow here, but if they did that, then Google's going to say, "Hey, she's something." PR rank of 10. If I then linked to, you know, not Google.com, if I then linked to, I don't know, CBSNews.com and like, you know, their main link, then I would then be linking to another powerful, high PR ranking site. Which I'm
now, let me go somewhere with what you've just said.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if CNN links to you, in Google's eyes, that would be a good thing because they do have such a high page rank. But other than CNN, the value to Google, it will not do you any good at all.
Unless,
why would I say that?
Well, unless if they just link as is, but what if there was a comment so that the rest of the world on CNN sees Empowering Women in Business?
So what? Who cares?
Well, because they have millions and millions of visitors. And
so what?
They're going to see. What do you mean, so what? Are going to see my site too, are they not?
Well, number one, I've actually done this research, so I can tell you that CNN's primary audience is men and not women.
Well, let's pretend it was a big site what's a big women's site? Cafe Mom. Cafe Mom, maybe most people don't know about it, but they're pretty well ranked, and they have my target audience. Let's say you would do this to me. Let's pretend it was my target audience, whoever this high.
Okay, it's got to be your target audience.
Okay, let's say.
So that's where I was going with that. Don't assume that because it's a big news site that it's going to do something for you.
Okay, point taken. Hear that?
So if CNN was your site, how would you go about getting CNN to link to you? That sounds like a mighty challenge.
How would I get them to link to me? Well, I would need to have something that was pertinent to what they were doing, and so I'm going to throw these things out in the air, and we'll see if Gina says, yes, you're right, or no, you're wrong. So could start with by commenting on some of the things that they're doing. If I do something that gets the attention, maybe by commenting on stories that they've got out there, and then, of course, with a link back to my site.
That sounds like a great idea. How about we get more strategic than that?
PR, press releases.
How about you go to Google, you find a commentator, not Google, you go to CNN, you find a commentator that actually has a show geared toward women. I'm pretty sure they have some.
Okay.
Most of the big news sites today, all of their shows have their own blog. And their blog is very likely to be a subdomain of their site. So recently I was looking at Tavis Smiley, who's a big guy on PBS, both on PBS TV and PBS Radio, and tavissmiley.pbs.com or .org. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's .org. tavissmiley.pbs.org. Tata Smiley's show has its own section. It's basically like a website within a website. There's a page that talks about Tavis, and there's a page that shows his show schedule, and there is a Tavis Smiley blog on tavissmiley.pbs.org. Because it's a blog, it works just like any other blog that will allow you to go and make a comment on any post within the blog. And so in order to get one of these very valuable backlinks in the eyes of Google, all you've got to do is find a way to make a comment on a blog on a high page rank site. But only do that if you can really put a comment on a blog that's meaningful to you, meaning that it has the right audience.
Okay.
Gina?
Yeah, Rhonda.
The USA Today, this might be interesting for Jennifer and a bunch of other people to know. If you're in a particular type of business or you have a book or whatever, the USA Today now has on their website links to their columnists in the various departments so that you can be able
cool.
to go and develop a relationship with the authors in your particular arena. I haven't looked up the people in the business segment, but I suspect there is somebody who either is a woman or who handles that that beat.
I would think they'd have a women's column.
Yeah, they probably have some kind of a women in business column or somebody who focuses on a small business enterprise or something of that nature. I would find out who that person is, and I would start finding a reason to be interesting to them by showing yourself as having valuable resources that their readers would want. So that's another site that has a high page rank. I don't know exactly what it is, but it would be very high as a news source. And you could build a relationship there. And I haven't looked yet, but I'm told they also have blogs. They're one of the things on my task list for tomorrow.
Go gotcha.
Check it out.
Excellent.
Well, here's a really interesting comment to make on that. Thanks, Rhonda.
Yeah.
There are two different ways to look at this. Number one, Google wants you linking to experts, and they also want to see experts linking to you. What you don't want to do is you don't want these reciprocal links because they're just not valuable one way or another. On the other hand, although they're not valuable in terms of your page rank, they can be very valuable for other reasons. And so sometimes it's okay to go and create one of these reciprocal links, even though it doesn't cause you to get better page rank. So here's a really good example of that. Let's say you do identify someone at USA Today who has a blog on the USA Today website who is writing a column for women entrepreneurs. Connecting with that individual could be really beneficial for you. One of the ways that you can connect to that individual is by writing a post on your blog that uses that person's name or that column's name mm-hmm. as anchor text to a link that points back to a specific post on that blog. So if you went to USA Today and maybe the site was like SuesColumn.usatoday.com. This is just a hypothetical example. And within SuesColumn.usatoday.com, you find a post that's really something motivational for empowering women in business. You could write a post yourself on your blog, Jennifer, that talks about Sue's column on USA Today and hyperlink that back to that one post on Sue's column.usatoday.com.
Right.
So that it can get her attention. If she's using a WordPress blog, what'll happen is the next time that she logs into her dashboard to put up another post of her own, she'll see incoming links. And it will actually show her that you have linked to her. So Rhonda's suggestion of doing something that would get their attention is something you can actually do right on your blog.
Right.
And what I would do is I would then go back to that blog and I would go to another post and comment on another post. I would not comment on the one that you just linked to because you don't want that reciprocal link. The fact that you're linking to USA Today and USA Today is linking to you is still going to be a reciprocal link, but it won't be completely worthless if you are linking to one post and another post is linking to you. It'll have at least a very minimal amount of value.
Okay. So, Rhonda, and I just want to tell you that you have a great namesake here, and you brought up a brilliant idea here. Taking your example, I went to USA Today and found that in small business, there's a woman by the name of Rhonda Adams who writes this column or this blog called Strategies. So, Rhonda Abrams, if you're listening, I'm going to be commenting. I'm going to be writing, connecting with you soon. But anyways, USA Today does have a high page ranking, not quite as high as CNN, but still pretty high. And so she's got this. She's got blogs and posts that I can see she writes fairly, well, about once a week. So I'm going to now go in there, and I'm going to find the topics where her audience connects with mine, and I'm going to write about that in one of my posts, link to it, and then I'm going to go to some of her other posts and comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. All right.
That's exactly it.
Good strategy. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, in the short term, the traffic is actually going to come just from the comment that you put out on that site. In the long term, after you've got tons and tons of these internal links, external links, and backlinks, it will come from organic stuff.
Okay.
But you need lots and lots of those kinds of links with lots and lots of keyword-rich content in order for the search engines to be sending you a decent amount of traffic.
Okay. So now, what kind of sites do you guys look for? Gina, you're in one particular market. Rhonda, you're the story lady. You're in a similar but different kind of market. What kind of sites do you guys look for to connect with in the way using the strategy we just talked about?
Oh, I don't even necessarily look for sites that have, you know, as much traffic as a CNN or as a USA Today. Typically what I'm looking for are sites that have the right audience. That, to me, is so much more important. The right audience is everything. If I'm not going to get into the right audience, then it's completely worthless to me, really. So I would really like self-improvement sites for me personally. My audience is typically women between the ages of 45 and 65 who are interested in self-improvement, who have an abundant type mindset, who are really looking for a way to improve their mindset, or not mindset, finances, who at the same time may or may not have ever thought of the idea of owning a business. So for me, a self-improvement site that's frequented by older women would be a great site to be at. I really like some of the Ning social networking sites like divapreneur.ning.com or spiritualpreneur.ning.com. And by just putting up a profile there and going and talking in their forum or even putting up a blog post on a blog in there can really bring in some decent traffic in the short term, even without the increase in PageRank. So I try to find things that can do double duty. I really look for ways of taking one action and having that one action get multiple results. In other words, getting the most bang for your buck. So I prefer not to be doing things just because it's going to improve my PageRank or my search engine ranking, but really do them because they're going to fill multiple needs at the same time. That was really the reason for my challenge in the first place. Yes, the way that I did it, it was going to create great page rank, but I don't think I would have done it if it was just for that purpose. It's also a way to sell my low-end products that then gets people interested in my high-end products. It's a way to build relationships with my audience. It's a tool that I can use to build strategic alliances and joint venture partners down the road. It accomplishes many different things all at the same time. And those are the kind of sites I look for, sites that are going to give me, fill multiple different needs at the same time. How about for you, Rhonda?
Well, I look for, a lot of the personal development sites for me, too, because the work that I do with teaching you to connect with anyone instantly through the power of storytelling has both a business application and is very much personal growth. People that are attracted to me want to be life changers.
Yes.
And that's true for you as well. We just
a
slightly different approach, but it comes in play. We play in a similar pool. And
although
so,
let me say that differently. It's funny because the people that I attract, I do attract two separate audiences. I do attract people who are not necessarily life changers,
right.
And I do have a number of people who don't really necessarily want to be life changers as customers. But I have a much, much higher lifetime value from customers who want to be life changers.
Right.
So which one is the better audience for me? It's certainly the one that you have.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure there are a few people who don't want to that, you know, come to me. But for the most part, I think if I ask, and I may do this just for fun, you know, ask my people, do you have a goal or desire to change thousands or millions of lives, I would bet that 99.9% of them would say yes.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, mine's probably about 65%.
Right. I may do that just for fun to find out. But what
Let me know what answer you get, please.
I will. What happens with storytelling is, on face value, if you say, do you suppose that storytelling would be profitable for you as a niche, and people would look at you and laugh and go, I don't think so.
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they?
Yes, and I've had Ken MacArthur kind of said, so you help people tell their story. How's that working for you?
Too funny.
Yes, and it was with that, it sounds nice and fluffy bunny, but it really isn't. It's not one of those fluffy bunny, I just want to make the world a better place type of things. There is so much power in it, but people don't know, and I don't necessarily all the time go around talking about that you need to tell better stories. I do that sometimes. In a way that I end up reaching people, oftentimes, if it's not through the actual personal development that they feel they have something to share and don't know how to get it out, they don't know that that answer is storytelling. They just know there's something inside, they need to get it out, they want to make some big things happen. They don't know what it is or how to do it, then they find me, and I tell them.
Need to get you on a call with me 2 weeks from yesterday. I did a call yesterday with Bob Yeager and about 15 or 16 of his students who are about 6 or 7 weeks into his coaching program. And part of what they get in his program is they do get a blog that is very much what I would call a Gina blog. It's a two-column right-hand theme. It's got the same kind of plugins that I teach. And so on this call yesterday, I was sharing with them both my strategies for targeting your audience and my strategies for using your blog to both build relationships and build credibility for yourself. And I was really impressed because these people are, like I said, 6 to 7 weeks into their blogging, and compared to my students who have been blogging for 4 and 5 months, they have 2 to 3 times more content on their blogs, and they're doing things literally every single day to drive their traffic. But not very many of them are seeing results from it, and so I was looking at their blogs to see why they're not seeing results from it, and oh boy, can you tell me what the number one reason was that they're not seeing results for it?
I can tell you because I see it in so many blogs, they're not telling stories.
You got it. Right down to no stories of their about themselves on their about page. They're just dry, boring, gobbledygook that appears like a resume.
Right.
And every single one of their blog posts, literally every single one I looked at, and I looked at 15 different blogs yesterday, in their blog posts, if they do have something that they're selling, then the blog post is very, very much a hype-filled piece of garbage. And if they aren't selling something, then it's nothing more than an essay or a white paper or something along those lines. There was not one thing that I read that both told stories, built relationships, and sold something. Not one.
Well, and I even worked with one of your apprentices yesterday about the same thing, and she says, I'd like you to tell me how I did with the storytelling piece in the blog post. And I looked at it, and I said, what story? I don't see a story here. And I, can I call you? And we hopped on the phone for a few minutes, and I told her what we meant by really telling a story, not mentioning a few facts from somebody's life, but telling a story.
Right.
And so... And so what comes of all of this, and in answering to this question, where do I find my market and how do I reach them, it's really people that are having some kind of message and they want to get it out. Most people don't know. Like what I say to my students and clients is, the problem you're looking for is the thing that keeps people tossing and turning at night and makes them lose sleep, like your example of Joe that you use so often.
You got it.
And so I say people are not tossing and turning, losing sleep, saying, oh, my God, I need to be a better storyteller.
Yeah.
But what they are losing sleep over is they're not getting results from their articles and their blog. They're not driving traffic. They're not getting walking ambassadors or fanatics, addicts, you know, whatever you want to call it, because they're not telling stories, so they don't realize what the problem is. Then if they sort of get that they need to tell stories, what they end up doing is more of the fact-filled type of, so-and-so was a divorced mom of three kids, or they'll say something like that and think that that's a story or that that's a piece of a story when that may have a piece of it, but what you really need is that emotional direct response element.
Yes. I was frustrated on the call yesterday because after I got done explaining the importance of stories and where to find stories and how to create stories, this guy says, well, if I'm going to use this magic formula for writing a powerful post, would it be okay for me to include testimonials in my blog post? And I'm like, oh, he didn't get it. Because the answer to that question is what, Rhonda?
Testimonials need to be stories, and if they're done properly, especially, they're going to drive huge amounts of traffic, and they're going to develop relationships if they're done right.
Much more so than any testimonial that would be on a sales letter.
Exactly.
Because the testimonial is the story. Do you get that, Jennifer?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as important about telling the story to market our message, so to speak, going back to Rhonda, you had somebody say to you, and how's that working out for you? There is a growing, for your market in particular, your audience, not only people who need to market themselves, but a growing need, desire, and just, I don't want to call it a movement, but something of people wanting to get their stories out, express themselves, figure out who they are. In October 08, Oprah Magazine, big feature article on people figuring out how to write their life stories because it's this extremely cathartic thing that people need to do.
Right.
There are speakers who go around having workshops, teaching people how to tell their stories, not even necessarily to sell anything, but because people have a need to write down maybe what their legacy is, who they are, have something to pass down. So
right.
I think you do is crucial, much, much bigger than marketing, although, of course, without having storytelling and marketing, then you don't have marketing. Absolutely.
Well, and that's partly why I touch both the business people and the personal development crowd, because and there is a trend. I don't know if it's big enough to hit Google Trends yet, but I can tell you from following the storytelling market and keywords and whatever relevant to storytelling over the past 3 years, you're seeing a lot more books on Amazon that are about the power of story or storytelling. They all do it very differently from what I'm doing, which is great, you know, but there is so much more talk about sharing your story, getting your story out, and so that makes it very interesting. And I have on my blog at profitablestorytelling.com. Gina, that you mentioned those people that were marketing products and they didn't have any kind of story. That the last post that I wrote, the headline of which begins with personal narrative examples and goes on, actually you wouldn't even have any clue that there's a product involved until right near the end and after the fold.
Yeah, see, that's the kind of post I'm talking about. Exactly the kind of post I'm talking about.
And that's the post I'm going to G-talk it over to your apprentice who was talking to me yesterday and say, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Where there's so much story that you're drawn into it, and the story has a point.
You're telling those stories, that's where you're using anchor text with links to other things. You can be linking to affiliate products. That in itself is an external link. You can be linking to other places on your blog. You could link to your own story. You could link to another post. You could link to a product that's on your same website as your blog. Those would be internal links. So it's from within there that you're doing these keywords with the anchor text.
And I do pull one of the terms from an external link of high value, but if there are a lot of internal links to different things, there's to blog posts and to and affiliate products and what have you. So, yes, that you can do all of those things. And I now, for the keyword that I was using, with one of those high demand, low supply keywords, and I've got about half of page one of Google for it right now.
Oh, nice. Now, here's something important to remember, and my students, when they're first hearing me say this, they don't get it. It sometimes takes them months to get this. Your blog posts do not have to be about your keywords.
And it isn't.
Let me say that again. Your blog posts do not have to be about your keywords. Jennifer, what does that mean?
Well, that means, as I struggled with that concept early on, that let's say I'm writing about the keyword of marketing, online marketing. It needs to be in there because that's a high-ranking word, and it's important for my particular target audience. But the whole post doesn't have to be about online marketing. It might be a mention, and it might be, you know, I need to do the correct linking and whatnot. But the story, I might have a story where online marketing is just a small component of it.
Mm-hmm. And online marketing is such a tough keyword these days. The volume is so bad on it right now, and the supply is so awful on it right now, I wouldn't even use that.
Right.
I would use other terms that you know your audience is searching for. Short of knowing that your audience is searching for them, it has to have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with your audience. So let me give you some examples here. So I know from my research that people in the wedding market are also interested in insurance, real estate, credit cards, and homeownership. The research is really clear about that. If I know that they are interested in any of those topics, if I've got a blog that's all about buying the perfect wedding dress, because I know that people are interested in these other topics, I can use some of those other keywords, things related to credit cards, things related to insurance, homeownership. I can put any of those keywords in my blog post, even though my blog post is really about finding the perfect wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I write a blog post that's about finding the perfect wedding dress that doesn't break the bank and keep you from buying your first house. And buying your first house is my keyword. My post isn't about buying your first house. It's really about buying the perfect wedding dress. But I've done it in a way that allows me to take all those people searching for buying your first house and get them coming to my wedding blog. Does that make sense, Jennifer?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's a really important thing to remember. And part of how I find these keywords, I go and research competitors inside of Quantcast, Quantcast, quantcast.com. I pay attention to the right-hand sidebar, and I look at other sites that this audience is visiting,
mm-hmm.
other sites that have similar audiences, and keywords that this audience is searching for. And it really does tell me tons and tons of other keywords that this audience is using. I can also go and do some research about the buying habits of my market and look at the other things that these people are also buying to get an idea of other keywords. And I can go to compete.com and put in the URL for any of my competitors and see exactly what words people are using to get to my competition's website. That last one is sometimes a little tricky for two reasons. Number one, compete.com is no longer free. And number two, so often lately, I have been going and looking at sites, and the words that people are using to find these sites are so off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, way off the wall. They have absolutely nothing to do with the market at all. And yet 10,000 people, 5,000 people a month are using it to get to this site. And usually what it comes from is people having articles up on their blog that have one little key phrase that they didn't even plan on being found in the search engines for, but it's driving traffic anyway. And when you find those completely unrelated terms, now you've got to go do more research still and figure out who the audience is that really is using it. Is it the right audience? Is it some other audience? It's really important to know that before you go off and use them yourself.
Right, because sometimes those off-the-word keywords that you find that you know, that words you wouldn't think of that would bring people to those sites, maybe they found the site by the accident, but then the question is, do they stay on the site once they get there?
Exactly.
That's what I'm looking for, yeah.
Are they buyers or regular visitors, or did they just happen to mistype something or type some really funky phrase, look at it and go, oh, that's not what I want, and click back?
Exactly. And so you can use the third column on the right-hand side in compete.com that tells you the amount of time people have spent on a site to help you decide whether or not that keyword is causing visitors to be engaged when they get there or not. That'll help a little bit. You know what's been really helpful to me lately is in the search analytics inside of compete.com, there's two boxes. One says website, and you put in the URL, and the other one says category, and you can pick a category. So it would show you for a category of blogging, for example, what is it that people are searching for that relates to blogging? And it'll give you all the keywords related to blogging. But if you scroll all the way to the very bottom of that category, there are about 25 or 30 or so audience behaviors. So you can look at behavioral segment for teenagers and see what keywords teenagers use when they're searching. You can look at the behavioral segment of baby boomers and see what they're searching. And sometimes that little back door can really give you some major ahas going, oh, I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's always really helpful. I've looked at probably 6 of those audiences in the last week, and wow, have they been great. I was looking at the environmental enthusiasts for someone who was going into a green market. And, man, there were probably 40,000 keywords in there that people are using to find green-related things online.
Right.
I looked at one for baby boomers. I looked at one for teenagers. Teenagers was really interesting. The guy I was looking at it for is a guy who has 3 Facebook applications. But in the top 100, more than half of the terms are related to MySpace and not Facebook. And that was interesting. He was shocked when he saw that, absolutely blown away. He had no idea that people were looking for MySpace that much more often than Facebook. He thought it was the other way around.
Huh. I wouldn't have guessed that anymore, but I guess that of the age group, the younger age group maybe was still, yeah.
I was really surprised, but apparently it's true.
Wow.
So the point that I'm making is that make sure you do the research and don't go with what your gut tells you, because more often than not, your gut's going to be wrong. I can't tell you how many times I think it should be one way, and when I do the research, it's 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
Oh, and there are keywords that I found because of, especially Click Ad Equalizer, I never would have even thought of that keyword. And then when you look at them, it's like, oh, my gosh, they have a lot of traffic, and there's a lot of demand and almost no supply, and what's there isn't very relevant or selling a product. And you can really provide some excellent service, build relationships, tell great stories and whatever, and pull them right in, you people in using that keyword. And I'm really excited to see what the results are.
Oh, well, make sure you let us know.
Will do, because that post that I put up was just yesterday, so it'll be fun to see what happens because of that.
Can't wait to see it.
And the post has nothing to do with the keyword except that I say, here are personal narrative examples, because since I teach storytelling, it's natural for me to say that. But that's not really what the post is about. It's leading into an affiliate product that, of course, has some amazing stories in it and is a personal development product.
Oh, that's a cool thing to do. Good job.
Oh, just so you guys understand this whole thing, it doesn't have to be about the keyword. The keyword is woven in there. It's woven in there a couple of times, and now on the next piece I'm writing using the same keyword, I'm able to use the first post as anchor text and even the dig of the first post as another anchor.
Yeah, you can. That's a great way to do it.
Yep.
So, Jennifer, did that whole sidetrack discussion help?
Oh, it's that whole sidetrack discussion is what not only makes this interesting, but absolutely, it helps reinforce and reiterate the things that are important to do as we're growing our businesses, because there's so many different things, and it's not always easy to understand. So, yes, going into great lengths and great details about keywords and what that means and how to find the right ones and how to use them once you've found them is really important. So, yes, I thank you both, as do our other listeners who are trying to figure this out.
So did we answer the questions that you had related to what I had done when I got started to get these pieces out there and in place?
You did. You answered the questions about the internal links. You answered the question about how you not only built a list quickly, but more importantly, how you built one that was more responsive, which is really important, and it's what everybody is looking to do. And I know we're running short on time here, but I just want to point out one other thing, something that you said early in the program that you did, which is this. You said you did these different teleconference calls, and many of those teleconference calls and the other things that you put together became more products. In other words, you don't waste the stuff that you're doing. And that was one of the other things that you did to be an effective marketer growing your business. You contacted other people to jumpstart your list growing. You did a variety of things to make it a very warm and very responsive list, a list that knew who Gina Gaudio Graves was, what she was about, how she was helping and serving the world, and how people could benefit from that. And you didn't waste any of it. You created a series of products that you then had, sitting on your shelf, or I don't think anything sits on your shelf very long, but to then take out there to the masses. So it's not just, creating work again and again, but it's building on your repertoire, and then you've got,
It's taking one action and getting multiple things from it. So every single action you take, you want to be doing things in a way that really gets you the most benefit from it. Whether it's writing a blog post, there are plenty of ways you can do that. Instead of writing an article that you place only on your blog, put it out to an article directory site, then take the little embed link from the site and put it back onto your blog. Now it's got twice the exposure for you than what you would have had just on your blog. So if you can find ways to take every action and get at least two results from it, you can get twice as far with half the effort. That's what it's really all about. So a lot of the same stuff is covered in my 30-Day IM Challenge, which you'll find at www.30dayimchallenge.com. as well as at theimuniversity.com, www.theimuniversity.com. And I want to thank Jennifer Carter from EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com and Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com, for being here with me today. And I hope you guys will join me again next week at noon Eastern for Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. So thanks, ladies.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Have a great week.